What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Ben Golver with the Washington Post. I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina from Sports Illustrated. Michael, I wanted to start with a quick thank you to all the Open Floor Globe members who supported my book project this week. I heard from a lot of them. I also wanted to thank you for that interview that we did on the earlier episode. I really appreciate it. It's been a whirlwind week, and it's been a lot of fun talking to different people about that book, and I just appreciate so much the support. Also, a quick shout out to the guys over at No Dunks Inc. We had a really fun podcast that we taped on Thursday morning, and you guys should go check that out as well. But Michael, enough of that business, because we've got bigger fish to fry. I mean, salmon, I don't even know, swordfish. It's the All-NBA Selection Show. Now, we have some late-breaking discussion on Twitter this morning, and we're taping this on Thursday, about how they're changing some of the positional designations, or at least opening them up, making them more flexible than they've been in the past. And just to recap, typically when you're voting, you have to select two guards, two forwards, and a center. And that's been the case, you know, going back years and years and years. But the way you understand it now, Michael, it sounds like some players are being eligible in multiple categories, right? So in other words, you could select some guys as a center or as a forward, or potentially a lot of overlap between the guards and the forwards. Is that right?
Yeah, so my colleague Howard Beck tweeted this out earlier today, basically outlining several players who, as you said, Ben, qualify at multiple positions. And before I saw that tweet, you know, I put together my team based on positions that the players actually play, because that's why even have positions if we're not going to categorize players as such in an All-NBA format. And personally, I would rather just be positionless, but those aren't the guidelines here. So I found it very curious just where some of these players landed, because they don't play those positions. So do you want me to run through a few of the key names here before we get going?
Well, for sure. And look, this has been a hot debate for a while, right? Because there was a couple of years there where guys like DeAndre Jordan were getting on because they were the center, right? And they were getting like a lot of attention. I think he even made an All-NBA first team. And everyone's looking around and saying, how are you possibly going to have a system that rewards DeAndre Jordan as being like a top five player in the league when we all know he's not that? And so it fluctuates a lot in terms of the quality of each position. Now, this year, we happen to have two centers leading the MVP conversation with Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid. And so I imagine, you know, that's kind of a tough cut in a normal year where you're saying, all right, well, a player like Embiid, it's kind of not fair that he has to be a second team selection because he's arguably the second best player in the league this season. And yet it sounds like they're tweaking his status along with some other guys, right?
Right. So it seems that apparently, so Embiid and Jokic are both eligible at center and forward, which apparently was the case last year as well, which is just very, very wild to me because those, I mean, Jokic in the past, you could at least say, you know, he shared the floor with Mason Plumlee when Plumlee was there. Joel Embiid just is like straight up a center. I don't understand any of this, like when he has played forward at all ever, or at least recently in the past few seasons. Like I don't recall him being on the court with another center ever.
Yeah,
the
fearsome twin towers of Dwight Howard and Joel Embiid, not exactly the go-to lineup for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Exactly. And I guess you could, you know, get funky if you wanted to say Horford was a center and Embiid was a power forward, but like that's a total joke. Let's cut that out.
And Embiid's bigger. I mean, that's kind of the thing with Jokic too. It's like, all right, he shares the court with Plumlee. Well, one of those guys would drink a 2-liter bottle of Coke every day when he was growing up, and that was Jokic. So by default, Jokic, you know, he's a bigger guy. He should be viewed as the center, right? At least that's how I've always done it traditionally. Can I tell you, I'm going to cut against the grain here, Michael. I don't hate this in terms of loosening up these positional designations, because I think there's a real question, why even have them at all? At this point, if we're getting more positionless, we're getting more interchangeable, and that's been a trend here for a while, shouldn't we be trying to reward the five best players regardless of position rather than trying to guess and cram them into different spots? And, you know, some people might view Jimmy Butler as a guard. Some people might view him as a forward. I know it makes it a little bit trickier when we're trying to pick our teams here, but is this actually a step in the right direction? Should we be trying to get more fluid and less rigid, Michael?
Well, 100%. But if we're going to, like, don't take a step in the right direction. Let's just like, dive in the pool. Like, make everything positionless. Like, as an example, someone like Bam Adebayo, who comes up here as being eligible for multiple positions, even though he's only played center this year. Like, do I think that Bam is one of the 15 best players in the league? Maybe. And so if this was truly positionless, Bam might have made my All-NBA team, but because it's not truly positionless for a guy who like brings the ball up the floor and is like one of the team's leaders in assists and guards every position, like, I don't know. It's just, it's really, it's grinding my gears right now that we haven't
positionless. Michael, you seem really, really pissed. So who are some of the other guys who are in multiple categories, and what is really grinding your gears? Which of these players is upsetting you, or is it the fact that it's just not uniform? I mean, why is it so agonizing? Is it just because you spent 5 hours making your teams and now it got blown up? Is that what happened?
Yes.
Well, Michael, not a good enough reason. Come on.
You know me too well. No, I spent a lot of time last night trying to put my team together, so I was pretty bummed when I saw this, because if I could put Embiid as a forward, then that would bump someone who was my first team forward to the second team, and there would be this whole domino effect that my brain can't really process right now. So some of the other players that are eligible for guard and forward. Jaylen Brown, who makes sense. Jason Tatum, Zach LaVine, Luka Doncic, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard as a guard, which is just absolutely ludicrous. Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Chris Middleton, Ben Simmons, Devin Booker. Curiously, Giannis is only eligible at forward, which I just don't understand.
And he also plays five a lot now for them, especially when they're taking Lopez off the court. And he's also kind of a point guard half the time.
Yep, exactly.
Points very well taken here. I think that your argument is looking better and better, that this is maybe the half step towards our future, where they start to make so many players have multiple positions that the guys who they don't give multiple positions to start to be kind of weirded out, and then there's an uproar over why doesn't this guy have multiple designations, and then eventually they just have to be like, this is too complicated, we have no more designations. Like, I think that we're probably now getting there more quickly. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, and there's one other player who is only a forward, Zion. Zion, like, how many times have we talked about the fact that he's basically their point guard? Like, I just make it positionless. Just do it. It's so silly to play these games. Like, just make it positionless. It's not a big deal.
Well, you do sound mad. I always love that. Let me start with your first team, right? And let me ask you, first of all, give me the five names you picked for the first team. Let's start there. Start there, and then let me ask you a follow-up.
Okay. I have Steph, Luka, Kawhi, Giannis, and Jokic.
Don't you think you need to switch it up and have Embiid in your first team? You do. I answered your own question. Sorry, I heard the sigh and I just pounced. You've got to move. Like, look, I know this system is lame. I know this thing works a lot more cleanly if you have Jokic first team, Embiid second team, and Gobert third team, and it's just kind of like nice and tidy with the centers, and you can kind of worry about all the other positions, but mm-hmm. I think if we're genuinely reflecting who had the best seasons this year, and you're allowed to put Embiid as a forward, even though it's goofy and even though it's dumb, it's the right ethical thing to do, Michael. He's more deserving than Kawhi Leonard. He just is.
Man. See, this is where I get a little...
This is why you're mad. It's the ethical dilemmas that get under your skin, man. You can't look at yourself in the mirror right now. You're so frustrated.
It is upsetting. I don't want to have to build a case against Embiid to be first team. That's not fun. I'm pitting Embiid against like Kawhi. It's just so like, that's not what I was prepared to do. So it's like,
no, it's a real curveball, but it's got to be Embiid, man. Like, I feel your pain. But when I was actually – when you presented this information to me approximately 13 minutes ago, it was a no-brainer, right? Like, if I'm looking just up and down, Embiid played enough games. He had a bigger impact, better stats to me than a Kawhi Leonard. His team's number one in the conference. They've been rock solid. Everything that I look at in terms of advanced stats, he's right there among the league leaders. Yes, he missed some time, but Kawhi also missed some time. You know, LeBron, you could be another candidate for that first team. He also missed some time. I've got Giannis as a clear first team selection. I don't think it's too difficult to take Giannis over Kawhi this year in terms of their team's performance, but also Giannis' statistical performance. So to me, I think you've just got to, you know, you got to swallow it, Michael, and you got to bump Kawhi to that second team. You got to put Embiid on there. Am I convincing you in any way?
I'm not normally a traditionalist, but I'm going to be very stubborn throughout this entire podcast, I think. So I apologize ahead of time, but I'm not budging. So my team.
Well, it seems to me like you don't want to apologize. You actually want to blame the league office for their ballots. This is like one of those hanging Chad situations where you're just like, sorry, guys, deal with it. This was your mess. I'm giving you what I came up with. This is how it should be. That's what it kind of sounds like, Michael.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I'm not even going to deny it. That's just what it is. So I'm sorry.
Well, but this
should make it. Yeah, I feel like this will make our conversation even more interesting, to be honest.
Well, my next follow up was actually going to be who's the toughest cut. And so I guess is Embiid the obvious answer. But let's say he wasn't eligible. Who was going to be your toughest cut?
I think I went like the Luka Dame conversation is one that we've been having all year. And I went back and forth on that debate a little bit. That was tough. I ultimately went with Luka, partially just because of the swoon that the Blazers were in over the past couple weeks, I would say, despite a couple wins most recently. But Dame, he didn't fall off or anything, but he just wasn't as superhuman as Portland needed him to be. And a little bit of that is recency bias. But Luka's been rock solid all season long, and since he is eligible as a guard, I think he's first team.
Well, this is a case where you had Steph and Luka like maybe a month ago and we talked about it, and I had different answers, and I'm coming around humbly hat in hand and saying history proved you right. I think there was a lot of movement in this particular, you know, backcourt race here over the last few weeks. Steph having just an absolutely insane April to go with a pretty crazy season all around. To me, he did vault himself into that spot. Harden takes a tumble because he's been out for an extended stretch, and a lot of these other guards that we're talking about, the really high-level candidates, just didn't miss nearly as much time as Harden did, even though I think when he was healthy, he arguably had the biggest impact on winning of any guard out there. And, you know, Luka, like you said, stable, steady. He's got them pretty much in the same spot in the standings as the Blazers. And Lillard, you know, he was so responsible for Portland's wins early. It's been a little bit choppier recently, and I just barely – I mean, to me, the toughest call was Luka versus Dame. I ultimately went Luka just by a hair, and I really – you know, I'm pretty conflicted about it. But, you know, it's a pretty good consolation prize to be, like, the headliner of the All-NBA second team, so I'm going to give that to Damian Lillard. So my top five was Curry, Luka, Giannis, Embiid, and Jokic. We don't really disagree too much other than over the balloting materials, it sounds like.
No, minus the fact that you have Embiid on your team. Yeah, this is, but do you feel a little like strange having two like honest centers here when the designation is two guards, two forwards, and one center?
Here's how I look at it. I play by the rules, Michael. This is not a case where I showed up at the SAT and the answers were kind of like partially filled in and I'm cheating the game here. It was their decision to list him in those categories. I'm not going to overrule their decision and tell them that I know more about basketball than they do. It's really goofy. They need to figure this thing out because it does matter more than they think. But ultimately, like, I think these recognitions, all NBA recognitions, are very important for history. When I was an official voter before I moved to the Post, and, you know, we don't vote at the Post for, you know, conflict of interest reasons, I would always take it very seriously because, you know, sometimes contracts and other things are involved with this. And so to me, Embiid is a top five player this year and he deserves to be on. If there's a loophole that gets him in, I'm not going to be the guy who shuts the loophole. So I'm giving it to him. Let's talk about second team. We already mentioned Lillard. Give me the rest of your second team. I'm assuming he's on there, right?
He is. Okay. You're gonna love my second team.
Did you put Westbrook on?
You're gonna
if you put Westbrook on your second team,
okay,
Michael.
Relax. I didn't go, you know, whole hog there. It's okay. I have Dame as a guard. I have Bradley Beal. I have Zion.
Okay.
I have Tatum.
Okay.
And I have Joel Embiid.
2 for 5 ain't bad. I mean, you're not passing, but you know, like, it is an F. You got Lillard and Embiid. I mean, you already screwed up Embiid earlier, but look, he can be no worse than second team. Let's put it that way. You're going to have to sell me hard on Bradley Beal, man. You really are, because I was going through some of the advanced stats. I mean, he's not really top tier on things like win shares. Obviously, he's got a big scoring number. We know that. He's not winning nearly as much as my guy Chris Paul down in Phoenix, who definitely deserves this recognition on this second team. Well, this kind of feels like a travesty of justice by you, Michael.
So I went into the Chris Paul conversation with an open mind, because I believe when we talked to All-NBA a month ago, I didn't even consider Chris Paul on any of the teams, and you had him, I think, second team, I want to say. And I was dismissive, and I apologize. I went in and I looked at his numbers, and one of the things I'm really valuing this season is the best ability is availability, and Chris Paul has just played a ton, and I respect this. Today is his 36th birthday, I want to say. And I respect players this season, given everything that's going on, all the different sources of anxiety, all the different sources of stress, the level of grind, and just how physically taxing this year is for so many different reasons. If you just played in every game and you're in your mid-30s, I feel like you just that's very, very, very impressive. You deserve a round of applause. So I think I came around on Chris Paul a little bit, but I can't compare, like, the fact that his team is really good and the fact that the Wizards are not very good, because it's like when Chris Paul isn't playing, the Suns are still beating the opposing team very badly. Like, they have one of the best benches in basketball. They're so deep.
But Michael,
it's like the Wizards are just garbage, man. Like, dumpster fire.
When Chris Paul's not playing, he's coaching. You know, the bench is stepping up because Chris Paul's got his fingerprints all over their brains, man. He's teaching them how to do it in the middle of the season. Look, he's 8th by win shares. He's 16th overall by real plus minus. What more do you need? I mean, he's blowing away some of your favorite guys in this category. I understand you love the scoring numbers. I don't think you're a fantasy guy, Michael, or you don't talk about it that much. But
no,
aren't you
I'm
falling
not.
In love with the fantasy basketball, you know, Bradley Beal scoring number, and just ignoring everything else that happens on the court? That's what it feels like to me, man.
No, I'm impressed. I'm not going to lie. I'm super impressed by the fact that Beal is averaging 31 points a game this season and has been either the leader or in second place all year long. And it's been a very trying season, as I said, especially for him. The circumstances the Wizards have gone through and what they've had to persevere through and the hurdles that they've had to overcome are just, they're huge. And I also am trying to add some context in here. And playing with Russell Westbrook for this, I mean, he's been on a tear recently, but we're talking about the whole season. And I remember months ago when Russell Westbrook was just punting the ball into the empty stadium seats over and over and over again. And so for Bradley Beal to have been as steady as he's been all season long, it's just very impressive to me. And I have one stat real quick for you.
Wait, I just want to make this clear before you give me that stat. So you're going to give Bradley Beal a Purple Heart of Valor because he has to play next to Russell Westbrook? This is what we're doing now?
All I'm saying is that if Chris Paul and Bradley Beal switch spots, it's like the Wizards are not miraculously the fifth seed.
Oh, yeah. No, they're better. It's the same thing that we saw when Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook actually switched spots and the Rockets decided to self-combust and the Oklahoma City Thunder shocked the world. I mean, look, you want to switch Chris Paul with just about any guard in the league, that team's getting better based on this season. The availability stuff is rock solid, but it's the mastery of late game situations, setting up your teammates for success, imbuing them with confidence. Davis Bertans wouldn't have missed a shot for 3 straight months if he was in Chris Paul's orbit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give you my stat, and then I have another stat that just popped into my head about Chris Paul. So for Bradley Beal, the players in NBA history who have averaged as many points as he is, so 31, with a true shooting percentage that's above 59, which is what he has right now, are Michael Jordan, who did it four times, James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's the entire list in NBA history. That's ridiculous. So it goes beyond, oh, this guy's just leading the league this season in scoring. It's like, this guy is having a historic offensive season, and I feel like there are not six guards who have been more impressive from opening night until today than he has.
I'm just going to be a flat-out hater on this one, okay?
These I know guys, you are. That's
they
okay.
They play goofy fast, man. They're not even really playing basketball. They're just running up and down the court constantly. Westbrook's got all these triple doubles, and it's this huge cause for excitement. Look, Washington's playing a lot better. They deserve credit for their turnaround of the season and for staying together through that absolutely brutal stretch where everybody was out and they had like a team-wide outbreak. I mean, that was no joke for them to pull that thing back together, and give Scott Brooks some credit there too. He's been kind of an easy punching bag over the last few years. You know, big time thumbs up. These guys play super fast. They give up tons of points. Every game's a shootout. I mean, their 30 is not a real 30. You know what I mean? Their 30 is like a 26.
The other stat I was going to say, first of all, I understand what you're saying, and I hear you. And look, it's a good point. Like, I'm not going to just like front and say that pace does not matter, because it does. But at the end of the day, like, you got to stop Brad Beal, and no team has been able to do that all year long. So I have to give him credit. And if it was easy to score 30, every team would have a player who did it.
Well, I would just counter to that. You know, it's not like they're unbeatable. They're 30 and 36, right? I mean, people have found ways to at least stop him enough or exploit their lack of defense enough. I mean, they just fall below that cut line to me. I had a hard time with Zion, too, for the same reason. Like, you just got to be better. Like, at least with Golden State, they're at 500. Steph Curry's got an atrocious supporting cast. So I can at least swallow and say, like, okay, you know, you deserve the All-NBA recognition, because without you, your team might have gone winless this year, right? Or Wiggins would have had to score 75 to win a game, right? I just can't get there with Beal, Westbrook, or Zion. You know, honestly, Zion was one of the toughest snubs because he's been incredible individually offensively, but they're 30 and 36 too. I just can't do it, man.
I hear you, and this is where you and I just, you know, we part ways here when it comes to
Absolutely.
Yeah. When it comes to just win the value of winning in an individual award ceremony. But I just wanted to real quick point out with Chris Paul, and I don't want to spoil whether or not he's on one of my teams later on in the conversation, but Phoenix's offense in non-garbage time minutes is literally worse with Chris Paul on the floor.
Oh, come on, Michael. Watch these games, man. Watch who scores these points. It's Chris Paul orchestrating everything.
I know. I do watch the games. I love Chris Paul. I feel slimy having to say things like that out loud.
No.
I'm going to take a shower after this podcast.
The stats are steering you right off a cliff. Sometimes, like, Google Maps will get confused. They'll have you drive straight into the lake. That's what that stat's doing for you, Michael. Okay, you had Zion. You had Tatum, too, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, make the case for Tatum over LeBron or Paul George, because that feels like a reach, bro, I got to say.
So it was tough. Like, I know you're going to ask me, you know, which player was my last cut, and I'm just going to preemptively let you know that it was Tatum in this category. And honestly, the hair between second team forward and my third team forwards was so slim that, like, Tatum could have just missed all three teams, and there was that possibility when I was initially going through the drafts. But, like, I don't know. This also comes back to potentially recency bias. The guy has just been so good over the past month. Like, there isn't a better scorer. There isn't a better, more capable offensive player in the entire league, in my opinion, over the past 2-3 weeks. Like, the way he gets buckets, the way he, you know, he's playing in lineups. I know Boston's been really up and down this season, but he's playing in lineups where he's, like, by far the most experienced player on the court. It's, like, him, Peyton Pritchard, Aaron Nesmith, two other rookie. Like, it's just, it's so ridiculous, the lineups that he's in, and he looks like the veteran now all of a sudden, even though he's just 23 years old, just turned 23. So, you know, you look at the numbers, you look at the efficiency, which has been steadily rising. You look at the fact that he is a very, very good defensive player, still underrated on that end in my eyes. And, you know, me personally coming to this conversation, I obviously am trying to be as unbiased as possible, but I watch every team, but I do watch the Celtics more than others. And there have been times this season where I've been very frustrated with Tatum, and there have been times this season where I'm just like, he is absolutely unstoppable and the Celtics are going to win the title because he's on the team. So I guess that's where I fell with Tatum. I know that's not like a great argument, and so if you want to pick it apart, go ahead, no, but that's just kind of what I came to.
I'm actually with you on a lot of that. So who was the guy that was like nagging, or like who was, you know, chopping at his ankles? You know, who was the last guy you picked basically Tatum over?
So there were, well, do you want me to give him to you now? Because it just kind of spoils my third team.
No, I mean, everybody understands if you get snubbed from the second team, you're going to the third team, Michael. So we're not okay. Going to Harry Houdini this thing. I mean, nobody's okay. Nobody's hopping out behind the curtain. But like, who was the guy who was the closest? Because it was a really tight conversation for me. I was looking at LeBron, Kawhi, because I had to bump Embiid into the first team. Paul George, right. Tatum, Zion was in consideration. So like, who was the last guy there?
You know, I think Jimmy Butler was the last guy for me.
So like, underrated candidate this year because he started slow, right? But he's actually played a lot of games. He's had monster impact as always, and the advanced stats love him.
Jimmy's incredible. You know, the fact that there's so many players who were really deep in the bubble and, you know, entered this season with a clear disadvantage because they had shorter off seasons to prepare than everybody else. And a lot of those players struggled. Jimmy, you know, as you said, he started slow. But this has been in a lot of, based on a lot of statistical grades, the best year of his entire career. And I'm not even one to argue. I mean, he leads the league in steals. He's bringing it every night defensively. He's incredibly efficient. He's still not shooting threes. That's fine. The assists are up. The scoring is up. The aggression's up. Just, you know, I cannot blame. The on-off numbers are very impressive. I cannot blame him for Miami's general malaise because I think a lot of factors go into that. And, you know, I just credit him for, like, just bringing it every time he's on the floor on both ends. And it was tough, honestly, to kind of pick him, to pick Tatum over him. And, you know, if you ask me in 5 days, I might swing in the opposite direction. I'm really enamored with the season that Jimmy's had.
No, it's an awesome battle. It was an awesome battle in last year's Eastern Conference Finals too. You know, I mean, it was razor thin going into that series. And, you know, ultimately, Jimmy's like physicality and experience edge won out over maybe Tatum's raw talent and shooting. But it was, you know, it was a dogfight for sure. So I went a little bit of a different direction on second team. I had Dame on my second team like you did. I had Chris Paul because I'm right. I had Kawhi Leonard because I had to kick him from my first team to make room for Embiid. My other second team pick was LeBron James. This was the one I had the hardest time with. I didn't know where to put him. Now, before the injury, arguably the MVP, or at least in that conversation. If you're putting him into a vacuum, I'm definitely taking him over any of the forwards, right? I'm taking him over Giannis. I'm taking him like for like a series playoff format. I'm taking him over Embiid, taking him over Kawhi, Paul George, definitely taking him over your guy, Jason Tatum, and I'm taking him over Jimmy Butler. Now, if he can get some more games under his belt down the stretch here with this ankle, I think it's going to help his case, and maybe he can get a little bit of momentum and just improve his stats slightly. I just think from an impact standpoint, like other than Steph and Jokic and Embiid, you know, LeBron has been right in that top-tier category when he's been healthy. So how much do you penalize him for the injury is the entire ball game? I think it's difficult to tell the story of this season without him. And I know LeBron is the type of player who sometimes we're like making exceptions for. We're sort of like tweaking our understanding of how things work because he's such a one-of-one type player. To me, like, it was either him or Paul George for that other second team slot after Kawhi as a forward. And like, as great as Paul George has been this season, I just, you know, I can't in good conscience put him over LeBron. I mean, there's no question who you'd rather have in key moments. And there's no question, by the way, when both guys were healthy, who was better. So often I look to games played in availability and minutes to drive this thing. I often favor winning for sure. Both those categories are in Paul George's favor. I just think LeBron's raw talent was worth keeping him in that spot. But to me, that was the toughest call because he missed a substantial portion of the season, you know, more than 5 weeks, and he's still missing games right now after coming back and having the ankle kind of flare up on him again. Did you snub him entirely?
So I want to, throw in the caveat that LeBron might be the best player alive still. And
Michael, you're going to put Zion and Bradley Beal on your All-NBA team and you snubbed LeBron James, Michael? Are you kidding me?
I want to say that if we were doing this exercise on the last day of the regular season and I had a better, more clear picture of how many games and how many minutes LeBron actually played, because, like, you know, where we're sitting right now, they only have a handful more games left, but I don't see LeBron playing in a majority of those remaining games. And he's missed so much time. And like, I was honestly comparing a lot of his numbers in, you know, total numbers, which is something I don't ever really look at total numbers when I'm just kind of perusing throughout the regular season, looking for trends and stuff like that. But when I'm looking at All-NBA, I think that total numbers matter because we're trying to assess an entire body of work. And LeBron just doesn't stack up with a lot of the other guys who I feel like are very deserving. And I know he made third team All-NBA in 2019. That was the season where he missed a ton of time with the hamstring injury, suffered on Christmas. But, you know, I just feel like the competition this year is stiffer, and I also feel like he's missed too much time, even relative to that example. So it was, like, if we were doing this on the last day of the regular season and he plays in four more games or five more games or whatever it is, and he averages 25, 8-8, and the Lakers win a bunch and they finish with the four seed or whatever, then he would make an All-NBA team for sure, and that's still a possibility. But I'm just looking, like, historically, and I understand that this season is very wonky, but there's just, like, no one makes an All-NBA team playing as often as and missing as much time as LeBron has. And it's like, if we weren't saying, hey, like, we're talking about LeBron James, if we had the same numbers and the same body of work, and we were talking about, like, I don't know, Jimmy. If we were talking about, like, Jimmy would have no chance. He wouldn't even be in this conversation. So I tried to factor that in as well. I know it's going to make a lot of people upset. I love LeBron, and I hope he comes back really healthy, because the NBA is not as good without him, and I miss him. And so I'm sorry, but I have to reward the players who I feel earned it more than he did.
So the Jimmy and LeBron thing is interesting. You know, Jimmy's only played five more games than LeBron this season, right? And so for me, I couldn't treat that as, like, look, I mean, they both missed substantial amounts of time. If I'm going to take Jimmy, and spoiler alert, I'm going to take Jimmy, then I got to handle LeBron in there somewhere too. And a similar deal with Embiid. I mean, LeBron's only played four games less than Embiid, and I had Embiid on my first team. So I didn't think it was entirely inconsistent. Look, Harden has played even less time than LeBron at this particular moment. And spoiler alert, I'm going to take Harden too. So I think if there's a takeaway from the way that I did this, I was more lenient than usual this year on the games played factor, in large part because so many guys missed time for so many different things. And look, I did draw a line. So for example, you know, Kevin Durant, phenomenal player, he didn't even play 30 games this year. That's kind of where my line comes in. Like, if you're playing, you know, 45 and maybe close to 50 by the end of the year in a 72 game season, I can get there. If KD's playing 34 and he's missed more than half the year, that's where it gets to be a little bit trickier. So everyone's going to draw that line in a different spot. I totally respect your thinking. I just, on those particular players, Jimmy, Joel, and LeBron, I thought it was close enough where I didn't want to just single out LeBron and, you know, write off everything that he had done at the start of the season. And I also think, like, early in the year, he played better than Jimmy's played at any point this season, right? Like, I think that he was rock-solid MVP candidate for the first couple months, and I think he had a really good chance to win it if he didn't get injured. I mean, Jokic probably still would have gotten it because he's just been absolutely ludicrous all year long, as we mentioned on the last episode. But LeBron would have been strong, strong competition there. Okay, so who did you have as your second-team center? Would you remind me, please?
Second team was Embiid.
Oh, that's right. So I moved Embiid up, so that opened up the spot at center for second team for me, and I put Rudy Gobert there. I think it's actually cleaner if you do have Jokic 1, Embiid 2, Gobert 3, because I think there's a little bit of a drop-off after those three guys in terms of that center spot, but you know, Gobert was next up. I don't think they're categorizing him as a guard or a forward probably this year. So I'm gonna label him the center and have him on my second team. So I guess that leaves us with one other discrepancy. You had Zion. I did not. Make the case for your new favorite player, I think, really, honestly. You're pretty much Team Zion, so let's hear it.
Yeah, so heading into this exercise, I was very stubborn and all I knew was that I had to find a way to get Zion All-NBA because I couldn't imagine him not making any of the three teams based on just the breathtaking production night to night. Like, when I think about this season, I will think of, like, in 10 years, 15 years, whatever, I will remember forever Zion making the first leap of his career. Like, it was just, it's been incredible to watch. And so when I am trying to compare him with some other guys, like, I know that, like, we've already talked about wins and losses and all that, and I look at the Pelicans roster and I'm like, I do not fault Zion one bit for their futility. Like, I know defensively he's got a lot of holes, a lot of question marks, some effort concerns, but, like, it's just the roster is not complimentary whatsoever, and he's still putting up historic numbers. And so when I compare him with, I'll just throw LeBron out there real quick. Like, Zion has made 234 more baskets than LeBron this season. He's shooting 61% from the floor to LeBron's 51%. Just like the minutes are not even close. It's like 400, 500 minute disparity. I just think all of that stuff matters. And I'm not saying that Zion is straight up just a better basketball player than LeBron. That's not what this is. I just think that his season on the whole has been more impressive to me than LeBron's. And if LeBron was healthy, LeBron would have been first team All-NBA, but he wasn't. And so I can't put him there. I got to put Zion. I got to reward him for everything that he's done this year.
No, I hear you. Look, I mean, I think that Zion's such a tricky player. I mean, it's a little bit like Trae Young from some years past, where he's so good offensively and the numbers are just so absolutely ridiculous. And Zion's had great availability this year, which was a huge question coming into the season. You can easily make the case, like, what if the Pelicans didn't have Zion? How bad is that team? They could be really, really bad.
It's the worst team in the NBA. No, not even close.
Well, I'm glad you feel so down on Brandon Ingram, because you've been trying to defend him to me for years, so that's good to hear. kind of a trick question for me. I laid that trap. But he's rough on D, man. He gives a lot back.
Yes, he is.
You know, and that's where it comes back to, like, okay, so he's got the raw point totals. He puts up the big stuff. But, like, if we're just tracking, like, how many points can we charge to his presence, right? How many is he conceding? It gets back into a little bit of that inflated territory, like with the Bradley Beal. And I tend to favor the complete players. You know, that's why I've got a player like Chris Paul on my second team. You know, that's why, you know, players like Kawhi Leonard are kind of a no-brainer, really. But, you know, complete player, I like to favor those guys. Even a Rudy Gobert has had a nice impact on offense this season. And for Zion, that was the stumbling block for me. I couldn't get over it. It's like, all right, well, you could average 36, but if you're giving up 34, you know, where are we coming out? And he was one of my toughest cuts. You know, you said you tried to fit him on. Honestly, I tried to keep him off. I was looking for excuses to not include him.
Oh,
well,
come on, Ben.
Look, I love Zion.
That disappoints me.
You know I love Zion, but we've got to see progress there, man. It's going to make a big difference. And if until he can have greater impact on that end, and until they can build better lineups around him, they're going to keep losing games, period. It's just there's no way around it. And it's important that we acknowledge that now, and rather than making excuses and denying it, so that we're not 2 years down the road saying, wow, Zion's doing it again. And they're still in 13th place in the Western Conference. So I'm holding him to a higher standard. I want even better greatness. I'm challenging Zion to step up on the defensive end. Brandon Ingram, you too, but we're trying to trade you first. And then we'll see where the Pelicans can kind of go from there. All right. Are you ready for your third team, Michael?
I guess so, yeah.
Did I rip your heart and soul out? What happened there?
No, this is such a tough... The whole thing is tough. There's so many snubs, and now we're getting to the end, and I think people are going to get upset. So let's just rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah, this sounds like the last day of school in, like, seventh grade. Michael, you can sign my yearbook, bro. Like, we can hang out this summer. Like, it's okay, dude. It's going to be all right. Who's your third team? Let me hear it.
Okay, so I'm going to say off the top that I actually did edit this team on the fly based on some of the changes that we talked about at the top of the episode with some players who are available for guard who I thought would only be available at forward. Okay, so I have Paul George as a guard.
Goofy
that
already.
That was my change. That was my change. I have Chris Paul, your boy.
Thank you. Thank you. You threw me a bone, Michael. I appreciate that.
Okay. I have Julius Randle as a forward.
Good one.
I have Jimmy, as I alluded to earlier, as my other forward.
So basically you had actually you have Chris Paul, but you have three forwards essentially, and you're just calling one of them a guard. That's fine. Okay. Who's your center?
Yes. My center is Rudy, which I thought was pretty clear-cut. Right. But I'm really interested, though, to hear – I know we're going to talk about a lot of this stuff. I'm just interested to hear who you had as center now that you have Embiid first team.
So I went James Harden guard. I went Jimmy Butler guard. I went Jason Tatum forward. You know, you had him on your second team. I have him on my third team. I went Paul George third team, so we were the same there. So we had pretty similar picks there except for Harden. And then at center, I went Bam. And this was the most annoying part to me because I think Bam was actually just a pretty clear-cut fourth as a center, and I liked it much cleaner if Embiid was second-team center. But I do think it's fairer to Embiid if he's a first-team selection. That opens up a spot that I really can't fill with any of my other snubs. So Bam snuck on as the third team, and that was my solution. What do you think?
I like it a lot, of course. You know that. I love Bam. I actually thought you were going to go with Capella for some reason. I don't know why.
Also considered. Yeah. But I don't know. I just think Bam's a better player. He's going to look a lot better in the playoffs. I think some of the Capella hype that's building lately is going to maybe come back to bite them a little bit once they face a real opponent in the playoffs where, you know, we saw it in Houston. You know, I mean, he's very good at what he does on both ends. But he's not as versatile as some of these other elite bigs. And, you know, his minutes would get cut in the playoffs, you know, pretty consistently against the best offenses. And I think, like, against Brooklyn, if they were to draw them, he's having a hard time. That's how I view it.
I'm not going to say a bad thing about Capella. I love him. I really have enjoyed his season. And I actually hope that they do draw the Nets in the first round. I think that series would be terrific, minus, of course, the Wizards versus the Nets, which is the series that I was born to watch. Okay, so I guess no Randle is the first thing that kind of pops to my head with you and your team. What gives there?
Very tough cut. You know, I've had a fun time, I think, this year with both Randle and LaVine. And I want to give credit. I mean, the last time we really talked about these guys in depth was for All-Star selections, and I was pretty down on both of them. Randle proved me wrong down the stretch, man. He's had an awesome year. The hot shooting has continued. The playmaking has been good enough. I think defensively, he's fine. He's not great, but he's a lot better overall player than he was a year or two ago. And so he deserves to be in this conversation. Now, ultimately, I view the Knicks a little bit as a cute story, right? They're just riding this wave, and they're maxing out their potential. I don't really trust him in the playoffs, you know, in terms of being able to lead an offense consistently. He's had a number of opportunities in big moments to come through and hit shots. And, you know, more often than not, when I've seen, it hasn't always been great. The box score numbers are huge, but he gets to do everything. He has a very wide berth. And I just think that the Knicks, their record's better than they actually are, is kind of how I look at it. And, you know, Paul George, phenomenal season. Tatum, phenomenal season. Those are my forwards. I would take both those guys over Randall still and not really think twice about it, right? So the only argument would be, well, Randall's, you know, had amazing health this year. He's played just ungodly amounts of minutes, so you should have him on and LeBron off, which is basically what you did. I'm sorry. There's very few situations ever I would take, you know, Randall over LeBron. I think I'd take LeBron over Randall 5 years from now, frankly. So I just couldn't do it. I mean, it my
he's played 1,000 more minutes than LeBron. 1,000.
Well, he shouldn't be number one. That's going to come back to pay a price. You know, that's
he's
you
in
know,
great shape.
It's congratulations to him for being able to do it and stay healthy and hold up. It's a huge credit. It's very Jimmy Butler like back in the Tibbs day, but. You know, that's part of the reason why I think they're overachieving is because Tibbs is, you know, playing his main guys huge minutes and they're not going to have another gear to go into the playoffs when all these other teams start ramping up their guys' minutes when it actually counts, right? So it was a tough cut. I mean, for me, guys like Beal, Randall, Zion, you know, Booker, Mitchell, those were some of my toughest cuts. And Randall was right near the top of that list. But the positional thing did kind of throw things off, you know, as we're trying to find spots for these different guys. You know, if you're going to accuse me of anything, it's probably being a little bit deferential to veterans, right? None of my guys are really, you know, newcomers in any degree. You know, out of my 15 players, they've all been in this mix before. I guess Bam could be the only exception. And the only reason I took him was because I was forced to because of this, you know, center positional change. And yep. I'm fine with that. Like, I didn't think that's, you know, Randall had the best case for a guy who improved the most to try to climb into this category, but I still wasn't completely convinced that he was there. You know, if we're doing the All-Star draft, I'm still not picking him all that high in that kind of a thing. And, you know, I think that he can be the best player on a bad offense, which is what he is right now, and I want to see more. So that's where I came down on Randall.
I mean, you know, I hear everything that you're saying.
Also, Jokic just destroyed him last night. Okay, that's not a real factor here because that's recency bias, but I saw some people trying to do Randall for MVP. We saw an MVP last night. You know, we saw an MVP last night in that game, and it was Big Joker who's about to destroy the whole world in the playoffs. It wasn't Randall.
I hear everything that you're saying. You know, I think that Randall... It seems to me, just from listening to you, that you know his reputation in the past. Shaking a reputation is really hard in the NBA, and so when you have one season where you're shooting like over 42% from three or whatever he is, after just being a total liability from the outside for seven straight seasons, it just seems like it's not real. It seems like a mirage. But this guy is doing it every single night and contributing on one of the best defenses, playing all those minutes. So I have to, you know, last night's loss against Jokic notwithstanding, I have to reward Randall for everything that he's done this season. It's been remarkable. I never thought it would happen.
So I'm going to cop out and just give him most improved player. Then I feel fine. You know, it's off my chest. So it's great. It works out just fine. Give me your five again. Actually, no. Tell me why you didn't have Harden. Just the injury.
We've talked about Harden all season long.
The character stuff is still hanging there.
Well, it's not. It's honestly not the character stuff. Okay, even if you remove the character stuff, the first 8, 9, 10 games of the season, he was a bad player who was not trying. So I look at every other candidate.
Wait, slow down. I mean, he's got the same stats as Bradley Beal when he was playing on a losing team. So what's the difference?
No. It was not the same. Watch the games. Stop it right now. Watch the games.
Just saying, Harden with the 50-pound weight vest is still better than Beal without one.
No, it's he wasn't good. I know the numbers are the numbers. It's because he has the ball in his hands on every play, but he was like punting games intentionally, and the Rockets were outscored by like 75 million points in 8 games. So
yeah, so what we're learning here is the power of first impressions, really. Like you just haven't gotten over it. And are you going to get over it by next year, do you think, or no?
By next year, yeah, sure, whatever. Clean slate. But this season, you know, you also factor in the recent injury. Like, I just think that him not playing throughout this entire stretch here also hurts his case when we're talking about other candidates who
totally
played big minutes.
No, it's a great point. He was the guy who had the lowest number of games played for me selected. And I was stunned how low that number was, because I just remember that 2.5 month stretch where it seemed like he was playing every night, playing huge minutes, carrying that Nets team all the way up the standings. He's the one who drove their their increase in winning percentage and all that stuff. So I wanted to give him a lot of love for that, because they wound up really high in the standings in the Eastern Conference, and nearly claimed the number one seed. At least they had it for a while. Probably won't finish with it. But that was the hardest part for me to give over. It wasn't the slow start. It wasn't the preseason shenanigans, showing up late and, hanging with Lil Baby and Honey Buns and all that. It wasn't any of that. It was this idea that, look, like, he missed a substantial portion of the season with that hamstring, and that dropped him, for me, all the way from first team to third team. That injury did.
I'll still never understand why you don't care at all about how he behaved earlier this season in trying to sabotage his basketball team.
Well, I mean, look, Michael, we have to have some context here. They got rid of his coach. They traded his teammate. His GM left him. His owner has lost so much talent, both front office-wise and player-wise, during his 2-3-year tenure. I mean, this was everybody getting off of the sinking ship, and Harden basically being stubborn and saying, I'm keeping the last rowboat against all odds. I will make sure that I get out of here too, right? Like, if this came out of nowhere, if they had catered to his everything, they had paid D'Antoni, Westbrook was still there, his chosen teammate, Morey was still there, and then just he flipped the switch one day, woke up, and was pissed off. Like, okay, I understand it. Like, can't you put yourself in Harden's shoes where everything is burning down around you and you're just like, enough's enough?
I hear all of that, and I agree. Like, fundamentally, I would have also wanted out. I think it's just how he went about it in the least professional, most dangerous way possible, and least considerate.
Flip side argument. Should we all be striving for radical transparency in our lives, Michael? Should we just be more direct and more honest with each other during these trying times of the pandemic? Who has time for pleasantries and politeness, at this particular moment? Put it all out on the table, get the trade done, and everybody moves forward in a better manner. What do you think? Are you convinced?
In the words of the great George Costanza, we are living in a society, okay? That's my response to that.
Well, arguably, it was total anarchy in Houston, and so maybe he wasn't part of a society at that point.
Fair. So I have a bunch of
that
other...
That got really deep, didn't it? Man.
I was not ready for it.
That was like 300-level poli-sci there for a second. It does bother me. It does. And the injury thing, you put them together, and it was nearly enough for him to not be on my third team. When I looked at the other guards, there was a couple of players I was really eyeing. Beal was one of them for sure. I'm sorry, Hart is just a better player than Beal. Kyrie was another one. He had his own issues kind of, being with the team, not with the team. And I actually thought Harden had a much bigger impact than Kyrie did when, throughout this season when they've been healthy. I also definitely gave a long look at Mitchell. That might have been my toughest cut in terms of the guards, because he had pretty good health all season, awesome stats, did it within a team concept, and their team won. So he probably would have been my replacement for Harden if I hadn't been able to talk myself into Harden. And then Booker's also in the conversation too. So that's where I was, how I came down on the All-NBA guards. What about you?
So I actually, a little inside baseball here, I had Kyrie as my third team guard before I realized that Paul George could be eligible. And so he was there with Chris Paul. And last night, when I initially put this list together, Donovan Mitchell was in Kyrie's spot for third team. So it was extremely close. And I think Donovan, I'm with you, I think Donovan would have made my team had he not been hurt recently and missed a bunch of games. And so, and Utah, I think a lot of his case also, even though I don't care as much about winning, his case is the leading scorer and the alpha option on by far the best team in the NBA was just you can't ignore that, but Phoenix has kind of caught up to Utah a little bit in the standings, which has hurt them, even though Utah is leading in net rating by a wide margin still. So yeah, I think that Mitchell has a really good case. Booker, it's so weird for me to pick CP over Booker because I think proud. Booker is
I'm
better.
I'm so proud. No, I'm so proud. And I want to positively reinforce that. I mean, if we talk about the most improved player, you know, award as a pat on the head like we did the other episode, Michael, you're the most improved podcaster. I'm patting you on the head. I'm so proud that you picked Chris Paul over Booker. Was it hard for you?
Honestly, it was. I'm not going to lie. For some reason, I really am enamored when it comes to like on-off for offensive rating. And just because I feel like if you're a star, your ability to impact offense is just so much more tangible than defense. And like Booker's on-off is just so much more impressive than CP's. As I said, in non-garbage time minutes, the Suns are actually better on offense when Chris Paul does not play. So it was tough. And again, if you ask me in 2 weeks, I might have Booker on there over CP. I don't know. But right now, CP is just, he's just been so rock solid all season. I'm so impressed with the fact that he's just not taking games off. It's just, it's remarkable, honestly. And the Suns are arguably the best team in the NBA right now. So, it was tough. It was tough and very, very complicated.
As we wrap up here, any final shout-outs or positional selections you would like to explain? Any final regrets? Any other messages you want to send to the NBA league office as they continue to toy with your heart? What do you think, Michael?
I have a few more honorable mentions that I want to just say out loud because I feel like they had really good seasons.
Well, maybe you should start with LeBron, perhaps.
He is number one, yes. And honestly, yeah, like if I had the time to prepare, and I'd probably find a spot for LeBron as like a guard over, I don't know, Paul George or maybe Beal. I don't know. We'll see. It's wild that they did this. But anyway, so I start with LeBron. Yes, you're great. Jaylen Brown. I don't think we really talked about him all that much. He's had a phenomenal season. I want to quickly, applaud Drew Holiday, who I don't know if he's the second best player on Milwaukee, but he might be the second most important in just watching them play and watching his role and watching how he interacts with Giannis. And, Chris Middleton's phenomenal, but Drew Holiday has really been more, I think, integral to just their offensive flow and what makes them potent. And defensively, he's just such an improvement, it's not even funny. And we're going to see all that in the playoffs from him. So I just want to shout him out. I want to, I guess, shout out Trey Young as well.
Real quick, let me just say Middleton also. I think deserving of honorable mention, both of those guys.
Yes.
I think your point is really interesting on like who's the number two now. I mean, I think in my mind, and maybe I'm just defaulting to past history, I would probably still say Middleton, and he had incredible numbers this year, you know, in the typical quiet way. But when you do have that ball handling responsibility like Holiday does, and when you do play such a key role for their backcourt defense, the stability factor comes through both ends for them. It's probably harder for them to play without him just because of their other guards available than it would be if they like missed Middleton for, you know, a week or two. And we saw that when Holiday went down earlier this year. They turned into this really inconsistent team, like five straight wins, five straight losses, etc. So I like that point a lot from you on Holiday. I had actually snubbed him from my honorable mention list, and I'm glad that you corrected that for the record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been great. I want to just say Trey Young, say his name. We talk about Trey Young a lot. The Hawks are very good, and I feel like Trey Young is kind of almost like getting to the point where he's underrated, which is really interesting for someone who started in the All-Star game last season.
I agree. I think he's being taken for granted. I'm not sure if that means underrated, overrated, because I still see some pretty big flaws. But I think that people just assume Trey is going to do what he does every night. And what he does is pretty difficult to do. So I think that I'm with you on that one. Probably a little underappreciated.
And okay, so we already very briefly mentioned KD. Just, you know, hasn't
impossible.
Played enough games, obviously, not
impossible.
Even close.
Yep.
But he's, when he has it, he's just, there's no one on planet Earth who can mess with him. He's untouchable. So.
Yeah, well, here's the problem. Your honorable mention list right now can beat your first team 5-on-5. I mean, which is, you know, maybe that perfectly encapsulates the All-NBA conversation this year and this wacky season as a whole. I don't know, Michael. I'm not sure we can do better than that. Any final thoughts?
I just want to say also, I feel like DeMar DeRozan is... Like, the Spurs might not win another game this year because of their schedule and because of some injuries that they've had. But he's just, he's so steady. And I've watched, I think you know why, Ben, but I don't want to say, but I've watched every single Spurs game this year, I think, almost. I don't think I've missed too many. And DeMar DeRozan is just so consistent, and they lean on him so hard. And the fact that this team is potentially going to even make the play-in is pretty remarkable. I don't think anyone had them being this competitive before the season started. And DeMar is a huge reason why. So I just want to kind of give him his due.
That was a cryptic comment there. Are you like Keldon Johnson's cousin or something? Like, what did you mean? Is this for your story coming up?
Yes, I don't want to say too much.
We don't want to spoil it too much. That's fine. You know, that's a big tease, Michael. It's coming up sometime down the road. We're going to be able to talk about it. I was like, you know, is Becky Hammon like your sister-in-law? Like, what? Where are you going with that one? All right. Yeah. I think we covered this thing front to back. Just to recap, my snubs, Kyrie, Zion, Mitchell, Booker, Middleton, Randall, Beal, and I really liked your nomination of Holiday. And, of course, KD got snubbed by injuries and the NBA's health protocols. Double snubbing for KD this year, unfortunately. Great takes, some really interesting debates. Open floor Globe, now it's your turn. Let us know, who did we overrate, underrate, forget? Open floor mail at gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. We're going to be back next week continuing to track these very, very tight races in both conferences. Michael, they can find you on Instagram at Michael Villas and Victor Pina, on Twitter at Michael Villas and Victor Pina. I'm on Instagram at Ben.Golver, on Twitter at Ben.Golver. Don't forget, go grab your book right now, Bubble Ball. It's in stores, Barnes & Noble, wherever else you get your books. And, of course, you can grab it online, too. All right, Michael, until next week, I will talk to you.
Talk soon, Ben. Hey.